Hi, this is Ed Camo, and before we get into today's show, I just want to let you know that we did have some audio problems with the interview, but there's such great content here that we did want to go forward with it. So just do want to apologize for that, and I hope you enjoy this episode of CRR Radio.
Welcome to CRR Radio from the Vision 2020 Project.
Well, joining us today on CRR Radio is Tom Jenkins. And Tom, could you take a few moments to introduce yourself to our audience? Can you take a few moments to reintroduce yourself to our audience? Because you're the first guest that I've had on twice.
Well, that's good. It's because I owe you money. No, I'm Tom Jenkins. I'm the fire chief for the city of Rogers, Arkansas. We're a career department, about 140-some-odd career firefighters serving out of 8 fire stations here in northwest Arkansas, and one of the 33rd fastest-growing city, over 50,000 in population in the United States, so a fun place to be fire chief. And I just got through serving as your president for the International Association of Fire Chiefs, so happy to be back on CRR Radio and visiting with you, Ed.
Well, appreciate you taking the time, and I guess you probably have a little bit more time on your hands now that you're not president anymore, I suspect.
Oh yeah, it was unbelievable. That's a blessing and a curse when you serve, as a principal officer in an organization like the International Association of Fire Chiefs. As I counted, it was 128 days away from my family and work, and while that's such a phenomenal experience for somebody to like me to get to participate in and just meet and visit with different people all across the globe. It's nice to be back and to have a little downtime. I gladly donate some frequent flyer miles the way I feel right now.
Well, good. Well, that's actually one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you was I was kind of curious what you might have seen as you were traveling around when it comes to community risk reduction. What was your perspective on it? What are departments doing that's, or maybe not doing? What could they be doing? What did you see as you were traveling around when it came to community risk reduction?
Well, I think a lot like you find in the United States, where you can say, I was myself this way not too many years ago, where I would hear terms like community risk reduction, and the first thing, and a lot of your listeners feel the same way or have felt the same way, you start off going, what is that? What does that mean? And once you understand what that means as a packaged element of the fire department to reduce community risk, well, you start to find, as you look just in the United States, that some people do it really, really well. Some people do it really well within certain specific types of risk, neglecting or ignoring or maybe just not addressing some other types of risk, and then some just don't do it at all, right? And I think that I had a chance to go as far away as Bahrain, the Kingdom of Bahrain, and got to see what they did there for fire protection. I was in Guam and Tinian and Saipan, which although they're territories of the United States, are definitely not places that many people have visited. And what I found in not just my travels, but also visiting with people all across the world is that community risk reduction is just like we find in the United States, that there are some phenomenal examples of people who understand what that means, and they're disciples of trying to prevent and mitigate incidents from ever occurring using it. And then there's other people that there's still some education left. And so when you have opportunities like what you're doing here, Ed, where you're talking with people and you're visiting about it and you're understanding the scope and complexity that CRR can bring to an organization, to a municipality, to whatever the political jurisdiction is, those are conversations we have to keep having because there's a lot of education left, not only in our own country, but worldwide.
Did anything stand out to you as really people doing it right or doing it well or a unique example of something that we don't typically think of as CRR?
Well, I certainly, one of the things that CRR taught me, it reminds me of, when we send firefighters here, we're big participants in, of course, the Executive Fire Officer Program at the National Fire Academy, but also the Managing Officer Program, and they do a good job indoctrinating people there that, all just like you hear words, it's political season, so, right, you hear people say, well, all politics is local. Well, so is all risk. And if you really want to do CRR, the fire chief can be in on it, the deputy chief of whatever you want to call it can be in on it, and everybody, you know, that wears gold brass can be in on it. But until those company officers are in on it and they believe in it and it's part of their DNA, that those first two companies understand the scope of what risk reduction means to their first due areas that they're responsible for every day, it's you know, regretfully, it just doesn't do a whole lot. And you have to make an impact. And I've noticed that, you know, the NFA does a good job teaching the firefighters that go up there to understand data collection and demographics and what poverty means to CRR. And globally, that's the same thing, is that visiting with a colleague in South Africa, that they have indigenous people there that present risk that is just off the charts with the types of construction they have to deal with, the areas that they inhabit, that doing simple things like providing smoke detectors, it's tough to do in some of these dwellings. And so the unique perspective that they bring, but they have full-fledged commitment behind it. They're partnering with the people like the IESC, with Oklahoma State University and their fire protection safety engineering people to try to address it. I'm always proud of a lot of our, not all, but a lot of our European counterparts, including the UK, that seem to do a better job than I think we do in the States of getting into residential dwellings. That you know, when you look at the amount of time, effort, and energy fire departments put in to fire inspection and to doing things to reduce the incidence of fire, most of that effort is done in the new construction time frame, or it's done in industry, business, commercial type occupancies, because that's what we can get access to. And of course, we kill 3,000 people a year. Where do we do it? Well, we do it primarily in one and two family dwellings. And a lot of other European places have done a better job about gaining access to where the risk is. And you know, unfortunately, in the United States, home fire inspection and is getting into people's residential, you know, dwelling units. That's almost un-American. You know, you find people are just very resistant to having, you know, especially anybody that is connected with government to be in there and doing it. But ultimately, for us, we've got to find ways to gently educate people to gain access, and that continues to be fertile soil, as far as I'm concerned, for us to move the CRR needle. And when I listen to colleagues from especially Europe, like I said, I'm jealous that they just do a better job at that. And you can see that, you know, that if you look at the, you know, fire deaths per million people and compare the United States to, you know, the UK or to Germany or to other Netherlands, I know off the top of my head, and likely others in Europe, I mean, our incidence of fire death is significantly higher. And that's unfortunate for such a progressive public safety arena like we have here.
So what is it that places like the UK are doing that does let them get into the homes? Is it just a different kind of cultural view on it? You know, a man's home is his castle here in the United States. Is that maybe not quite the case?
I think it is. I can't help but wonder, even talking to colleagues from Tokyo about things like this, if it's not the fact that we thank goodness, you know, we're blessed with being very insulated to international affairs, and when you have countries that have experienced large scale conflagrations, you know, kind of in modern times within the last 100 years, well, I don't think it's lost on them that they need to, there's still people who have that kind of institutional knowledge, have that oral history that they remember large scale conflagrations. And so I think that it becomes a little bit more natural to talk about the need to reduce the incidence of fire, that fire is still seen as such a, you know, big threat there. And I know community risk reduction is much more than just conventional, you know, fire prevention and battling the incidence of fire, but that's still a big piece of the puzzle. And I think in this country, if you turn on the news, you don't find a lot of outside of the wildfire threat. I don't think that the normal room and contents fire that still is killing a lot of people, like I said, over 3,000 or roughly 3,000 people a year, I don't think that we've almost decided that's acceptable as a culture, is what I feel like. It's, you know, it, to be newsworthy, you seem like you have to have multiple fatalities, and that's unfortunate. And so I think that we still have a little bit of an elevator speech as firefighters in a world full of active shooters, in a world full pandemic diseases that you know that get our attention, like Ebola. I think that we have to remind people that even though fire is going to always be, it's likely to always be an enemy, we can't just become accepting of its consequence. And I think even that is a little bit of it, Ed. I wish I knew what kept us from getting closer, but I know we here in Rogers, you know, we've had a home inspection program where we try to offer that to the community, and that's so rarely taken up by anybody. And I wish there were a magic bullet to make it utilized more frequently, voluntarily utilized more frequently.
You mentioned getting the company officer buy-in, which is one of the things that here at Vision 2020, we kind of focus on culture change. Any ideas on how we can get that kind of buy-in from the company officer when it comes to community risk reduction?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I hope people like Keith Bryant, Tanya Hoover, and Dennis O'Neill, I hope they're thinking about it too. I think they're doing a good job at the NFA. I love that managing officer program to me is probably one of the best things that our United States Fire Administration, specifically the National Fire Academy, has done to help indoctrinate company officers in CRR, because they're in here asking me questions about their first due territory, about the character of the building construction, about the demographics that they protect. And they know the answers already, but they've never looked at them in terms of numeric value. And so they get these men and women excited about it that I send up there. And I bet that's contagious. I doubt that's just a Rogers thing, that they become a little bit more interested. So I think we've made maybe the most important step we've ever made. I don't know that that was the intent of the MO program. I doubt it was to help spread CRR, but whether it's intentional or accidental, it's working as far as I'm concerned. And so I think when we're up on Capitol Hill advocating for funding of the United States Fire Administration, of the National Fire Academy, we need to remember that the dividends that pays, well, that's in, I mean, to have 10 years ago, 5 years ago, I guess 10 years ago, I really didn't know what CRR was, but definitely 5 years ago, I would have been, tickled pink to know that one of my captains, understands and gets it. And that becomes, a virus that there is no cure. That once other fire captains and leaders begin to see their colleagues get it, I think that it does grow. And people, firefighters like to understand and they like to know, and they certainly don't like to be less informed than their colleagues. And so I think that all those things help, but ultimately, I don't know, doesn't it also involve promoting the right people? That we need to make sure that acronyms like CRR and are not foreign to our leadership as they're preparing to promote. We have task books that they have to complete to be eligible for promotion. We have processes in place to prepare them for future responsibility as they compete in those competitive processes. And I think, a fair criticism of my own department and my own leadership is to say that we need to make sure that language and those concepts need to be commonplace, not just for captains, but they really need to be the commonplace among firefighters and drivers and lieutenants and people at other ranks to make sure we're having those conversations. It'll be better when everybody knows what that is and we're moving things forward.
One of the other challenges we're seeing is volunteer departments. Places like Rogers, you have personnel that you can assign. They're on a regular shift, regular schedule. But volunteer departments have a different kind of challenge that they're facing. Any ideas there?
Yeah, you're right. The current president of the IAC, Dan Eggleston, he runs a combination department that has a career staff that's close to, this is right around what I have, but he has something like 500-600 volunteers in addition to that. And I think of, just in terms of management, take CRR out of it, just in terms of management complexity, a combination department like that, oh my gosh, that would be so tough. And then you find these places that are wholly volunteer. And of course, I think we could quickly, you and I could dive into this recruitment and retention problem that we have with volunteers and understand that this is part of it, that this is just another thing that we're tacking on to volunteers and volunteer departments to have to do. But at the same time, I kind of wonder if this isn't an opportunity for volunteer departments that we have. It's not uncommon that you have people who may not be physically capable of doing, you know, the rigorous firefighting activities that we require of them. But, you know, maybe this is an opportunity that we all can take advantage of, people who have the heart to make a difference, have the brain that they can intervene and help, whether that's from an assessment, community intervention, and education, whatever we're trying to do there. Maybe it's an opportunity that volunteer departments can leverage to harness the willingness and the talent within their, you know, their own political jurisdictions to make a difference. But you're right. While I'd like to be an optimist and think it is an opportunity, it's also a challenge. It's a challenge to find people to address it. It's a challenge to find the time for these volunteer departments to do it. It makes me very, very fortunate, to feel very fortunate to have a career staff, but it really makes me admire the leadership of our volunteer fire service, that there's a lot of departments, volunteer departments, doing stuff in this arena, and I hope they continue to make progress.
And you're right, it could be an opportunity too, because as you were mentioning, CRR isn't just fire. It's not just firefighting. It's not just fire prevention. There's a whole other arena, too, when it comes to public health, falls, the opioid epidemic, things like that, that maybe we bring in the experts from the non-traditional areas to work with the fire departments.
Yeah, I think we have to. I think that the fire departments of the future are going to be – fire is always going to be a fundamental element of our mission, but to your point, Ed, that our mission's only going to expand into non-fire areas, and there's a lot of people that are apprehensive about that. Maybe that's natural because it's change, but I think CRR, out of necessity, when you look at whether people understand CRR or not, what they do understand is the increasing call volume, and there's no way we can keep resources. We can't just keep perpetually adding resources. That eventually we have to deal with the problem, and whether it's opioid, whether it's the community health care crisis that manifests itself in so many areas and in a lot of different forms, from people that are abusing the 911 system to the lack of available health care, you know, that we're, you know, and 200 years ago, the doctor came to you, but in 2018 and beyond, the only health care providers making house calls, that's the fire department. And we can't do that for everybody all the time. And so I think that, CRR is going to be here to stay, and it's going to be something that has to be adopted and understood and embraced by departments of all size, of all types, because it will end up having operational impact, has operational impact in the number of incidents, emergency incidents we go to, and ultimately it'll help us balance the resources that we have to protect our communities. It's a good thing, but it's change, and it's something else on our plate that we have to contend with. So I think partnering with experts out of other allied industries is going to be an absolute must.
Well, we've been talking with Tom Jenkins, who is the chief in Rogers, Arkansas, the fire department out there, but he's also the past president of the IFC. And we've been talking about what he learned and what he saw as he was traveling around the globe in his position as president. And Tom, really thank you for joining us again here on CRR Radio.
Hey, it's always a pleasure, Ed, and I appreciate you being the cheerleader for this particular topic. It's a game changer for us, and we appreciate your leadership.
And if you're looking for more information on CRR, you'd be sure to visit the Vision 2020 website at www.strategicfire.org. And please be sure to subscribe to CRR Radio, where you can see all the past episodes that we've had now in our second season. My name is Ed Camo, and thanks for joining us on CRR Radio.
Thanks for joining us on CRR Radio from the Vision 2020 Project. For more information on community risk reduction, please visit us at www.strategicfire.org.